Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This program contains dramatizations of real events. Some names and timelines have been changed. Listener discretion is advised.
In the news business, we cover stories of the horrible things people do to themselves and to everybody else on a daily basis. As a journalist, you try to detach yourself from that. But there are some that stick with you, and this was definitely one that stuck with all of us. It was sickening. It just turned your stomach. It was just incredibly brutal. The Crow Indian Reservation encompasses 2.3 million acres, and it is the largest reservation in Montana and happens to be the fifth largest reservation in the nation. It's a very different world. It's sparsely populated. It has this very wide open, lonely, quiet, and sometimes a desolate feel to it. You can drive for hours without seeing another car pass you on the road. April 17th, Steve Peterson made his monthly drive up to Montana to check on several head of cattle he kept at a ranch. During this drive, there was a part on the road on Highway 212 where he could turn off and head north and relieve himself. So he pulled off at that specific point that particular day. It was well off the road, well out of sight.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
He looked down and he saw it was a woman. She was naked and she'd been beaten badly. Steve went back to his pickup and grabbed a sleeping bag, and his first compulsion was to wrap her up, put her in his pickup, and get her some help. But he said she was in such bad shape, it was impossible for him to get her in the pickup. He sees a car coming, so he starts flagging down the driver. And as luck would have it, it was an officer with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the BIA. And that's when Officer Cottingham sees Lynn lying on the road.
I have three children. And my middle child is Roy Lynn, rides horse. We call her Lynn for short. She had a beautiful smile. She was a beautiful person inside and out.
We grew up together and kind of just always thought we were sisters. Roy Lynn was kind of like a peacemaker. She just wanted to make friends and wanted to be loved. She wanted to be a nurse practitioner because she loved babies. She tried to get into college, but then she met Eric. When she met Eric, she was real happy. She thought she found the guy. When I met him, he was really quiet to me. He just didn't seem like her type. But she wanted someone to love. She wanted someone to love her. She got pregnant in 2013. She was really excited. Eric was working at Coal Strip Mine. And she's like, Trista, me and Eric, we found this house. It's a big house. We're going to be renting it. And we get to move in a few weeks. She was happy at first. But the relationship between Lynn and Eric, it was rocky. Eric was jealous. He was very controlling. Every little thing that Lynn would do, he would have to have a say in it. They had their highs and their lows, moments of arguing, fighting, but then it would go back to normal. And it just kind of slowly got out of hand.
Lynn became different. She was pushing me away. And I did my best to talk to her.
Mom, sit.
I am.
Stop cleaning. I've got it.
It's okay. Did you cut yourself?
Yeah, pregnancy brain.
Where did you cut yourself?
I looked and she had a big bruise under her arm. And I said, Lynn, what happened? And she didn't say anything. And I knew that Eric hit her. I said, you need to leave right now. You just need to come with me. And she said, no. She just insisted that she stay there. She was afraid of him. And I don't think she knew how to like cope with it.
We encouraged her, hey, Lynn, that's not right. That's not how we get treated. But the reason why I think she stayed with Eric was because Lynn really loved him and cared for him. She had so much faith in him that he wasn't who he really was.
Lynn and Eric came and stayed with us the weekend. That night, she went into the kitchen and I saw bruises on her again. And I asked her, did Eric do that? And she didn't say anything again. She didn't answer me. They had plans to go somewhere that next day. And I said, Lynn, you should stay home tomorrow. Don't go with him. And she didn't say anything. She went back to the room and I went to my room. The next day, we were hoping that Lynn would stay home with the baby. But she left with Eric and they took the baby.
Hey, it's Roy Lynn. Leave a message and I'll call you back.
I called Lynn's phone. It would just ring, go to message. I kept leaving messages. Nothing. Lynn wouldn't call. So I was like uneasy about that. I kind of knew Lynn was in trouble. And I didn't like that feeling. Nightfall came, and I couldn't sleep, and I started praying. And I asked the Lord to bring Lynn and her baby home safe.
We were sitting in the newsroom one day, and we'd heard that a woman was found severely beaten on Castle Rock Road. There was really no evidence available at the scene, but she was still alive. The woman was able to tell the BIA agent that she was at the Killfeather Saloon earlier the night before with her boyfriend. And that's what sent Agent Cottingham to the saloon to try to get the surveillance video.
Hey, boss. I'm Agent Cottingham. I'm investigating an attack on a young woman. According to what she told us, she was here last night. We working?
Nope.
Do you know who was?
Nope.
Is there anybody else here I could talk to?
Nope.
That camera work?
Agent Cottingham asked the bar owner to download the surveillance video that was inside the saloon the night before.
What's the problem?
It's not working.
Well, why not?
Don't know. Guess I'll have to call the company.
How long will that take? Well, there's a phone. Go ahead and call. I'll wait. Thank you.
So while they were trying to get those technical issues ironed out, the agents started talking to patrons in the saloon. They did find out that Roy Lynn and Eric had fought the night before, that she was visibly upset, that she was crying. And so that set them on a path. Where is her boyfriend, Eric?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I was visiting my mom and my sister, and about 5, my phone rang. It was the police. We're here at your home. You need to come home now. And I didn't say anything. I hung up. I hung up, and I didn't tell my mom and my sister. I just up and left. And when I got home, the police were already in the dining room.
Why don't you have a seat?
They told me that they had found Lynn. She was flown to a hospital in Salt Lake City. But I was, like, shocked. I didn't know what to think.
My mom came over, and she was playing with my kids in the dining room, and she got a phone call, and she started screaming. So I ran to her, and I said, Mom, what's wrong? And she said, something happened to Roy Lynn. And we were thinking, well, if this happened to Lynn, where are Eric and their baby?
They did an Amber Alert on the baby. I was like, this can't be. It's like a nightmare. And I need to, you know, wake up from it.
Right away, we thought it was Eric who did it. We were all at my Auntie Ernie's. Everyone was just praying. And then somewhere amongst everyone, a phone rang. It was Eric. Eric said that he was going to come and shoot up the house. He said, I'm coming there and I'm going to kill all of you guys. My uncle informed the cops, and then the cops found Eric barricaded inside the house with Eric and Lynn's baby.
Eric, drop the gun!
Get off my property! Or I'll start shooting! You hear me? Go! Now!
I think they had Eric locked off in that house for like 5 or 6 hours.
Eric, gun down! Put the gun down, Eric!
We all went to where the cops were and we waited.
When we got to Salt Lake, her doctor told us she lost a lot of blood. Her kidneys failed. She was on dialysis machine. She was on all kinds of machines.
Roylynn was not only beaten badly, she had been set on fire. She had an accelerant gasoline poured on top of her. She inhaled that accelerant, so when she was lit on fire, the fire actually burned inside her mouth and down her throat. She was burned with second and third degree burns over 45% of her body. And those burns were bad enough, but you also have the contrast with the colder temperatures. It was very chilly that night, probably in the 20s. So not only did she have the damage from the burns, she also had severe frostbite on her legs as well. She was in exceedingly critical condition.
My husband went and saw her, and he came back, and he didn't say anything. He was quiet, and he didn't tell me how Lynn was. And I didn't ask. I just refused to go in, and I stayed out in a waiting room, and I prayed. I prayed for strength. Why would someone do this? Why Lynn? Just a lot of whys and no answers. They investigated Eric. They searched the car. And they said there was nothing at all in there that belonged to Lynn.
They didn't find nothing of Roylynn. No DNA, nothing in there. How could that be? Lynn drove that car. I mean, they shared it. We thought, like, oh, he cleared everything. He cleaned it out. He didn't leave a trace.
When investigators talked to Eric, I think they thought they would get a pretty good line on what happened.
Where were you 2 nights ago, Eric?
I went to a restaurant with my girlfriend. We had a couple drinks.
To Kill Feather Saloon.
Where else can I go around here?
You know, your attitude's not going to help you. You're already looking at attempted murder here.
Attempted murder? Is that what that bitch said? I tried to kill her? Come on, man. Look, I'll be honest. I've put my hands on her before. I have. Okay. I never tried to kill her. Ever.
So you were with her at the Killfeather Saloon?
Yeah.
And then you got into an argument, and you drove her out to that gravel road, and you lit her on fire. What I want to know is between the restaurant...
What did you just say?
It's not over for you yet, okay? If you help me, maybe you can get a plea deal out of this. Did you get into an argument? Maybe she said something. She mouthed off and rubbed you the wrong way.
No, wait!
And then you wanted to shut her up for good.
Wait! What do you mean? Lit her on fire! Where is she?
Eric, listen to me! You don't get a second chance.
Where is Roylynn? What happened to her? Tell me, is she okay?
This was a really difficult case for investigators in those early days because where Lynn was found is a very remote, desolate area. It's not like in town where you have traffic cameras at the stoplights. This is wide open space in rural Montana. So they're dealing with a lack of evidence. They're dealing with a lack of motive. They're dealing with a lot of unknowns. They had a lot of questions they had to ask, and they didn't really even know who they had to ask yet.
After the feds cleared Eric, he didn't call and say, hey, how is my son? Hey, is there anything I can do? He just went ghost. We didn't know where he was at. After he got his car back, he just left. Eric's mom lived in Arizona, and I believe that's where he went back to. We would try to get updates from the feds that were involved, because we didn't know anything at all. And it was just kind of quiet. I mean, we didn't hear nothing. But we still thought it was Eric who did it because he took her to the saloon. When I first got to Utah and I went into Sealand, it was hard. She was burned everywhere. I remember looking at her thinking, is this Lynn? I couldn't even, I mean, you just stand there and you just cry and cry and cry. But I think we all just had a lot of faith that she was going to get better and go home.
Family came. And then they came back home to Montana. Because they had jobs and they had families. My husband said, I need to go back and work too, but I'll come back. And I said, okay. And I was all by myself over there at Salt Lake, at the Vernon Inn. I was in the waiting room by myself. I couldn't go in. Her doctor came out. She said Lynn was scared. And that was what made me go in. I closed my eyes and I walked up to her and I said, Lynn, I'm here. My eyes were closed. And I said, Lynn, I'm here. I told her I was there. When I opened my eyes, I saw her eyes. Her face was all burned. She had no nose. She had no lips. Her eyes. She could see, barely see with one eye because she lost the other eyesight. You couldn't recognize her. I had the nurses play gospel songs. I could see her feet move to the music. And I would talk to her and I tried my best not to cry in front of her. Or my voice to even, like, you know, shake, or I tried so hard to be strong. She was like in and out of surgeries. She went through surgery 3 times a day. Then she had frost bites on her knees and her feet. Her fever was really high. And they said that the fever was from the frost bite. So they brought the papers and I signed it and they took her out. When she came back, she had no feet. I was crying. It was so hard.
There was no evidence but the video surveillance from the saloon. So once the technical issues were ironed out, the officers were able to watch this video. And they started to see that there might be somebody else they could talk to that might lead them to the truth of what happened to Lynn. And that set them on a totally different path.
Just a second. Let me cue it up.
Once investigators were able to see the surveillance video, they start getting a clear picture of exactly what happened at the Killfeather Saloon that night. And they determined that Eric and Lynn were there fighting.
Sit down.
You stank.
Eric left. In the video, you can see her crying. And she was going around asking people for rides.
When does she leave? Who are these two?
I don't know who that woman is, but I think that's Frank Sanchez.
Good. Let's bring him in.
The first person they went to interview was Frank Sanchez. Frank was Cheyenne. Where the Killfeather Saloon is located is very nearby the Northern Cheyenne Reservation.
It's like an hour drive from Crow to Cheyenne. And I hear stories of Cheyennes not liking Crows, and some Crows not liking or getting along with Cheyennes.
And they identify Frank as someone who was at the saloon the same time as Lynn. And so they wanted to go talk to him to see how he might fit into this puzzle of how Roy Lynn went missing and was found along Castle Rock Road. After Frank Sanchez is identified as being on the video surveillance from the Killfeather Saloon the night before, the agents go over to interview Frank. Frank tells them that wasn't him on the surveillance video in the saloon. It was actually his brother DiMarzio. The agents find DiMarzio. He's already in custody for unrelated charges, but they knew that they had to talk to DiMarzio to try to drill down a little bit more on exactly what happened to Lynn. DiMarzio denied being there. But then he found out that they actually had him on video surveillance, and DiMarzio says, finally, that he actually took Lynn and dropped her off at a trailer park, and the last time he saw her, she was walking up to the trailer park, and that's when they left.
So where did you say that trailer park was again?
I don't know. It was dark. I was drinking.
So who were you with then? Maybe they remember.
You know, you don't have to say anything if you don't want to, DiMarzio. We should have enough for an arrest.
You're gonna arrest me for giving a girl a ride?
What about your girlfriend? What was her name again? Angelica, right? What's her last name?
Whiteman. Angelica Whiteman.
But while they talked to him, investigators found out that Angelica Whiteman was one of the people in the car that evening with Lynn. So they're searching for her. But it's like Angelica just vanished in the wind. She was nowhere to be found.
When the cops were updating the family, they didn't really want to release anything. Any little type of information we got, it was just the same thing over that they were still looking. They were still looking to see who it was. They were still looking to build their case.
And that's when Angelica starts to lay out the events from her point of view of what happened that night. That night at the saloon, DiMarzio and Angelica were in the bar and they were gambling and drinking. Angelica said that she saw Lynn in the bar. She was crying.
Keep it.
Angelica, let's go.
Hey, do you think I could get a ride? Where are you headed?
Crow Agency. Where are you guys headed?
Cheyenne. But we don't mind the drive. Right, Dee?
Nope.
DiMarzio's brother, Frank, was outside the bar. Angelica says they got into the car. They left the saloon. As far as we know, Lynn had never met Angelica, DiMarzio, or Frank before. These were complete strangers to her. She put her trust in them, hoping that they would get her home safely to Crow. And that's when the details get so horrific. You can't even fathom how somebody could do that to someone else. As they're making their way to the Crow Reservation, Angelica was fixing her hair and her makeup in the mirror and saw Lynn looking at her. And that irritated her. "Why are you looking at me that way?" And Lynn said, "Nothing, no reason." Angelica reached around, went over the back seat from the front seat and started fighting with Lynn, punching her in the face and pulling her hair. And then Lynn is fighting back against Angelica inside the car. Angelica said she told DiMarzio, "This bitch can walk to Crow." So DiMarzio pulls off on Castle Rock Road, just north of Highway 212. And that's when the fight spilled outside the car.
What are you tempering?
Harder! That's what you get!
Oh my God!
That's what you get!
Look at her! She's so messed up!
They beat Lynn to the point where she was unconscious. She couldn't defend herself anymore.
Hey.
How's that feel? Can you hear me?
Hey, where are you going? Hey, uh-uh.
Hey, you can't
just
leave us.
Hey, come here. You're finishing this. Come on.
Where do you think you're going?
You're finishing it. I'm going to show you this. Look at me. I'm going to show you this once. Come over here.
DiMarzio tells her you need to finish her off. And according to Angelica, he shows her how to choke Lynn with the bandana.
Come over here and finish what you started.
And Frank says, "No, you just blacked her out." So they knew that Lynn was still alive.
Frank Sanchez was the one who stripped Roiland naked. DiMarzio told Frank to get the gas can in the trunk.
The next thing we know is Angelica says she saw DiMarzio pouring gas on top of Lynn.
They don't know who lit the match and threw it on her.
And according to Angelica, DiMarzio runs back, jumps in the driver's side of the car, and takes off. He says, "Don't look back. Don't look back." And they leave the scene with the flames in the rearview mirror. When Angelica was asked why it happened, she said she really couldn't explain it, but she would blame it on her drinking. They were all drinking that night. Everybody in the car was at various levels of intoxication, and that could possibly be a huge indicator as to why things just spiraled out of control. The biggest hurdle investigators faced was just really trying to drill down on what the truth was and exactly who did what, and everybody was scared. Everybody was lying to protect themselves. So there are a lot of gray areas. And even today, we really don't have a clear picture of exactly what happened.
The investigators said that she walked 3 miles to get help. Roiland sat out there in that road for 14 hours before the farmer came across her body. I mean, she suffered. It's just hard, hard to think about it. The severity of what they did to her is, it's beyond, I mean, you can't even comprehend how they could do that to someone, how they could fight her when she just wanted a ride home.
Lynn held on and fought for her life. But I think her body can take it no more. Her doctor came and told me that she was gonna die. I went in there and I shook her head. I told her, Lynn, it's okay. And I said, don't be afraid, and I won't be afraid. And I told her just to fall in God's arms, and she said, okay, and she had tears coming down. I said, Lynn, we'll be okay. And I told her that she's gonna be okay too. And then that's when she passed away.
In 2016, there was a report done that found that there were more than 5,700 reports of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls across the nation. We also found out through a study from the U.S. Department of Justice that Native American women are murdered at 10 times the national average. And that just boggles the mind because the reservation population-wise is nothing like it is in the metropolitan areas. And so you just start to really understand, and it soaks in, really the plight of these women on the reservation and how vulnerable they truly are.
There's no justice. I don't think there was any justice because Lynn's not here. Lynn's not ever coming back. All she wanted was to be loved. No, she's not even here.
She's so very much alive in our hearts. We'll never forget her. I know she can never come back here, but I know one day we'll go to her. We'll be with her. And that's the hope that we have.